The office that I'm representing here today, the Immunization Safety Office, seeks to perform high-quality vaccine safety research to identify adverse events after immunization through surveillance and to perform studies to assess causality and preventable risk factors for adverse events. So this is going to be a fairly sort of rapid-fire overview of some recent hot topics in vaccine safety, and hopefully there will be a little bit of follow-up and Q&A time after all of the presenters have gone through. So I'm going to start with a recent finding from the Vaccine Safety Data Link, which is our national vaccine safety active surveillance system set up at these geographic locations and that covers more than 5.5 million people annually. So rapid cycle analysis, which may be a buzzword that you've heard, essentially is a new approach that takes advantage of the fact that we can now do analysis in near real time of this data, and in fact can monitor the safety of newly licensed and newly introduced vaccines on a weekly basis. In not that long ago, you had to wait 6 to 12 months for so-called cycles of data. So hence, being able to look weekly generated the term rapid cycle. But bottom line is it's near real-time surveillance. So the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices recently heard an analysis about the combined MMRV vaccine. And the outcome of interest was seizures, particularly febrile seizures. The initial look at the data in an automated manner found an elevated risk for febrile seizures with MMRV, and a subsequent study was undertaken. So what was found that for MMRV compared to separate MMR and varicella vaccines, the rate of febrile seizures in 7 to 10 days after vaccination was about twice as high. And to put that into perspective, so for every 2,000 children who received MMRV instead of receiving the vaccine separately, you would expect one additional febrile seizure. And additional analysis of that and work on that with the ACIP is ongoing. As you all know, this is a vaccine probably that most of you all are not using at this time. Might be available in early 2009 from what we've heard. So after hearing this, the ACIP made a small change in the recommendations for MMR and V vaccines, and essentially what this boils down to is there is no longer a preference for the combination product because of the potential higher risk for the adverse event of febrile seizures. And that was just published in the MMWR last week. So there are a couple of other recently published studies out of our office that are relevant to the issue of MMR vaccine safety. The Vaccine Safety Data Link confirmed a risk for a low platelet count after MMR. However, they found no evidence of either acute or long-term complications coming from that, with a risk of about 1 in 40,000 doses, and that's consistent with previous studies. This was the largest study that was done on this topic. A recently republished review of VAERS suggested that MMR might rarely be associated with hearing loss. This was partly in follow-up to some reports we had received following the mumps campaigns of a few years ago, and obviously further research is going to be needed to confirm that hypothesis. Staying on the subject of MMR and varicella vaccine safety, in conjunction with NCIRD scientists, we now have a 10-year safety overview for the varicella vaccine. So this is looking at an experience now of more than 50 million doses. Overall, the vaccine really has a very good safety profile. Serious adverse events are quite rarely reported. There have been four lab-confirmed cases of vaccine virus reactivation associated with both herpes zoster and neurologic illness. The information we have is that all of the patients involved in these cases have recovered. And so the bottom line message here is that, you know, we need to really be vigilant for safety on an ongoing basis, and some events might be so rare that we need to keep that ongoing vigilance. And again, we're taking steps to try to ensure that there aren't a lot more of these cases out there through both reporting to VAERS as well as submission of laboratory specimens. So this is data that's going to be presented in a couple of other forms here in the conference. I believe there's a poster as well as an oral presentation. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it or steal the thunder of those other folks, but this is, again, data from the Vaccine Safety Data Link on Rotatec and Intussusception that essentially shows that, based on this active surveillance data, the number of intussusceptions occurring within 30 days after this vaccine is not higher than we would expect to occur by chance alone. And so now this reflects nearly two years' experience of this vaccine, and this data is consistent with data from a number of other sources. And so it's to take a step back, it's worth remembering that the experience of the withdrawal of Rotashield after intussusception, while it was, I think, traumatic at the time, has ultimately led us now to a point where we have a safer and effective vaccine against rotavirus, and that's a great public health benefit. Brief overview of safety monitoring for Gardasil, currently the only U.S. licensed human papillomavirus vaccine. For those of you who are interested in this, we are actually presenting a poster on it at the EID meeting over at the Hyatt Regency today at noon for those of you who are might want to try to sneak over there and see that. So reporting to VAERS in the first year following its licensure was vigorous. Issues such as deaths, Guillain-Barré syndrome, DVT and pulmonary embolism have been reported to VAERS, but a number of analyses have shown no evidence of a causal relationship between the vaccine and any of those events. And again, when we have communications updates, we post those at our new vaccine safety website for CDC, which I'll highlight later in the talk as well. An update on meningococcal conjugate vaccine, or Menactra, and Guillain-Barré syndrome. There's a large controlled study that's being led by Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare. Although this is one of the VSD sites, it's not being conducted as a VSD study. I do serve on as an external advisor to that study. They have some data analysis underway, but they don't anticipate results until next year. For those of you who are interested in more details about the study, the study's leaders have voluntarily posted that protocol at clinicaltrials.gov. And there is ongoing monitoring in VAERS and VSD for this, as well as coordination with the ACIP working group. Highlighting a couple of recent studies relevant to the thimerosal issue that have drawn a fair bit of attention. Recently published VAERS data showed no difference in safety profile between preservative-free and preservative-containing influenza vaccines. We were mainly looking at outcomes such as local infection and local hypersensitivity. So that supports the ACIP recommendation, which says there is not a preference between those two kinds of influenza vaccines. There's a newly published study done in infants that shows rapid excretion of ethylmercury given from vaccines. And there's also, many of you may be aware of the California Department of Developmental Services data, study published by Rob Schechter and colleagues that showed that there was not a decrease in autism prevalence following removal of thimerosal from most childhood vaccines. I also wanted to highlight a study published out of our office in the past year. Bill Thompson's study published in the New England Journal of Medicine last fall. And again, the overall conclusions were that the weight of the evidence in the study does not support a causal association between ethyl mercury exposure from thimerosal and neuropsychological functioning at ages 7 to 10 years. It's a very well done, very rigorously conducted study. I had nothing to do with the conduct of the study, so I'm quite comfortable in saying it was quite quite rigorously done, and a lot of comparisons were done. An issue I think that's important on the programmatic side that we've highlighted for ACIP and for other public health audiences, syncope occurring vaccines, occurring after vaccines. This comes under the heading of potentially preventable adverse events. So what we have seen here, and this is data that is being submitted to the MMWR for publication as well, is there has been an increase in reports to VAERS that's occurred in parallel with licensure of several new vaccines targeted at adolescents. And again, just to remind the clinicians and public health vaccine providers in the audience that ACIP does have a standing recommendation, which is echoed by the American Academy of Pediatrics, to strongly consider observing patients for 15 minutes after they are vaccinated. That recommendation is across all ages and across all vaccines. Our clinical immunization safety assessment network, which some of you may have seen on a poster downstairs, recently conducted a meeting that was sponsored by the National Vaccine Program Office on the role of genomics in the future of vaccine safety. And just to highlight a couple of studies that CISA is doing in this area, establishing a biological specimen repository for laboratory evaluation of adverse events, looking at genetic risk factors for diverse events such as, again, GBS, wheezing, and rheumatoid arthritis following hepatitis B vaccine. It's an area that there's a lot of interest in right now. The bottom line is we're still at the point where there's literally not yet a single published study in this area. So there's a lot of interest, and there is research ongoing, but stay tuned. I wanted to highlight a couple more office-wide projects going on here. Obviously, all of you were involved in some way or shape or form in the large HIB recall. Again, this was done on a precautionary basis. There was no evidence of vaccine itself being contaminated. We worked with FDA, several partners within CDC, to ensure that there was no evidence of contamination involving the recalled lots. Conducted enhanced surveillance for vaccine-associated Bacillus cereus infections, and we also used the vaccine safety data link to assess usage of these affected lots prior to their recall. So again, we used a lot of the CDC communications resources to reach out to states such as EpiX, developed a case definition, and ultimately, although there was a sample tested, it was from a lot that was not involved in the recall. There were no lab-confirmed Bacillus cereus infections. And we also looked in VAERS and found no evidence to suggest that the recalled lots had a higher risk for infection or contamination. And we also looked before the recall was publicly available to ensure that we weren't going to see any sort of a recall bias. And so that was a really, not just an office-wide, but really a CDC-wide response. I did want to touch briefly about some recent headlines and media coverage involving the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. So again, just some basic facts here. CDC does not have a role in the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. It's administered by HRSA. Neither CDC nor any other government agency has found any evidence to support the hypothesis that vaccines cause autism, and no court has conceded that there is a link between vaccines and autism. As a matter of policy, the government is prohibited from discussing any active VICP case because of reasons of privacy and confidentiality. Okay, well, I'm going to cover just a couple of more topics here. I did want you all to be aware that our office is developing a scientific agenda for vaccine safety. This follows up to a report from the Institute of Medicine from several years ago. So there is a three stages that are going on. Commander Karen Broder, along with Dixie Snyder, as a senior consultant, are leading this effort for our office. So we are now developing a draft research agenda. We've gotten extensive internal and external input. There is an initial NVAC meeting on April 11th for any of you in the DC area or able to travel. We invite you all to participate and provide your input. There will be other opportunities, such as through the Federal Register notice, to provide input as well, and we welcome that. And again, ultimately, we will put this forward as a, if you will, a five-year plan for vaccine safety studies. This is just to give you some idea of some of the broad types of themes that have been suggested to us as targets for research, everything from vaccination practices, host factors, adjuvants, really the broad and interesting and challenging landscape that is vaccines and vaccine safety today. A couple of issues on the communications front. There's now an easier to find and more user-friendly website. Again, I'm comfortable in saying that because I had nothing to do with it. Our communications staff, led by Per Stephanie Thompson, have led this. Kathy Mills has been our web developer. So it's cdc.gov/vaccinesafety. There is also a new VAERS brochure, which I thought was not yet printed, but lo and behold, if you go to the exhibit hall downstairs, it has been printed, and you can pick up copies of the new VAERS brochure. And again, we welcome any constructive suggestions on the content or improvements for the website. Wanted to conclude by highlighting a couple of recent journal supplements where Immunization Safety Office authors have made contributions. The pediatric supplement on adolescent vaccination and two recent Journal of Infectious Diseases summaries, one on the smallpox vaccine with a focus on the civilian program of 2003-2004, and the varicella vaccine summary that I mentioned earlier. There are a couple of other articles in that relevant to the safety of the vaccine as well. And so I'd like to acknowledge the outstanding staff that work in my office for their contributions. Thank you.